So, now the recording is on. So welcome to the introductory lecture of simulation. As I said, I will be recording this, and the other lectures are already pre-recorded. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, my mouse is, of course, there. So, what is simulation? The base word comes from Latin, and it basically stands for imitation. So, we are imitating something, and we are imitating it for some purpose. And sort of the basic of simulation is to model something to capture the essential features of the system we are modeling and we want to simulate. I have underlined both the model and the essential because they are important. Because for one real system, you can make several different models. And these models have different properties. So we have to know which properties, which features we want to reproduce. Because if our model is not able to reproduce these features, we can run the model, we can simulate and get no valuable results. I will come back to that later on, but when you simulate, basically the approach, the solution is not unique. You have to know what you want to get out of the whole simulation. So before you start anything, you have to understand what it's all about. Of course, sometimes what it's all about is to understand what it's all about. So then you have to be ready to play around, make several models, learn more. So, like in any research and development activity, you can't assume that you will hit the bullseye in the first run. But don't start too fast. Try to understand what it is all about before you start modeling. Modeling, in fact, in some sense, it involves three models. Of course, there's the functional model of the system, which is complicated software doing a lot of fancy things. It requires a lot of coding. But I would start with actually the output, the essential feature. So you at the end of the day, you want to get something out from your simulation, something that represents your system, some behavior you are interested in. Very often you can't expect to get the real thing of interest from a simulated system, but you will get the proxy, something that tells you enough of the thing that you want to reach. Like if your real goal is customer experience, you can't simulate the real experience of real people. Maybe you want to reach the service times, waiting times that affect, and these are sort of within the reach of simulation. So you have to first decide what you want to observe from your simulated system. Because your functional model has to deliver these observables. And then, of course, you have to model the environment where the system is sitting. So what input goes to the system? What affects to your target of interest? And very often you have to model that. You don't get the real input, but you will be introducing random streams with complicated probability distributions, and which distributions, which parameters, that is something you have to model. So you may have some observations, how to reproduce these observations in sufficient quantity. You will most likely need some statistics there and some model. So it's not only the fancy software engineering part, but understanding the need and understanding the environment, what you have to model. Then what for? Models can be made for different purposes. There's one taxonomy here. You have models for observation, so just basically for visualizing the system, which might be very, very important when you have to communicate your system to the CEO and the board of the company or the layman. Explanatory models for understanding. Predictive models for making what-if predictions. So if I change this, what happens? I was preparing this or sort of reminding myself of the slides yesterday and was led to thinking, what is the difference between explanatory model and predictive model? Explanatory model is accurate enough to tell that this thing depends on that one.
Because I will be recording this in any case, so where is my mouse? I hope it doesn't record that. I was saying that predictive model has to be more accurate than just explanatory model is more qualitative, tells about dependencies. Predictive, they should be able to make quantitative predictions. Design models are predictive models that are in some sense systematic. So you make a systematic study for comparing alternatives so that you can decide between different alternative ways of operating the system or just different system configurations for decision making. And when you automate that, you come to optimization models. These have to be so robust that they can run on parameters that are given by the optimization routine, not by people. So they should deliver results on whatever parameters they are fed with, because you can't control the optimization routine when it steers these models. So in some sense, this taxonomy goes from crude models to more and more refined and robust. Now I have to get my control back. What you may understand with simulators, simulations, and you are familiar with, but we will leave out of the scope, is all interactive simulators. So flight simulators, car simulators, game-like environments, which are typically they are for entertainment, for training, not research instruments as such. So typically they communicate real time with the user. So they are getting data from you. You are interacting with the model, and they give you feedback, video, sound, something else. So they also represent the system that is being modeled, but for different purpose. I will focus on the purpose a bit later. Other taxonomy for models is how the models are built. So you may have heard about scale models. So these are concrete models that represent the system, miniature models, or computer models. So with more and more powerful computers, we can make more and more complicated computer models for different purposes. And they can be more flexible than the scale models that you have to concretely make from concrete stuff. Models can be deterministic, stochastic. A deterministic model is something where you pretend you know everything exactly. So typical models you have in the physics textbook, they are deterministic. If equals ma squared, everything is expressed by symbols, and you give them exact figures in real life, things typically are stochastic. So you may have some probability distribution for some value, and your model has to live with the different possibilities and deliver results that are stochastic. You can have models that you can solve analytically. So they give you a closed formula for the observation of interest, or they have to resolve to numerical solution. So you have to write a computer code that gives you an approximate observation of interest. And the models can be continuous or discrete, which basically decides whether the system has a finite number of states and changes or infinite. So if it's continuous time or discrete time. Whether the real time is continuous or discrete, that's a philosophical question, but that also depends on the things you want to achieve. So whether you are interested in certain discrete states of the system or the changes in these states, the dynamics. And that once again depends on the goals you set for your sort of study and observation. Discrete models are in some sense easier. Continuous requires more mathematics, more analysis, calculus type nuts and so on. So some examples, starting with a sort of flying ball. This is something where you normally know the equations from the physics textbook. You assume exact initial conditions, you are able to integrate the closed form solution. So it's a deterministic model with analytical solution continuous in time. So you have initial conditions, you have the equations, and you can integrate the solution for for observers. That's a toy example. If you take the same physical phenomena, but in sort of more real setting, so like a projectile cannonball, for modeling, you need more complex equations. You have to assume drag, lift, wind as external conditions, and also affecting to the flight of the projectile. Normally, you can't assume the initial velocity to be exact because it's defined by explosion with, of gunpowder. Wind is always precisely known because it varies during the lifetime. So it has to be solved numerically, and the solutions are still stochastic. They are accurate only to some margin with hopefully a probability distribution that tells about the variability of the prediction. And that's something that you have to take into account when you apply the results. So you have the error margins, the possibility of extreme events, and so on. Same phenomenon, but a different context requiring more detail to the modeling and changes to view to the actual system. You might have heard about the Game of Life. It's, I guess, popular in, was it already in the 60s? Cellular automaton that has deterministic rules. There's a number of rules, finitely many. Discrete states, so it's a deterministic discrete time system that can produce all kinds of fancy things. And then the type of model we will be discussing here is typically like Ewing models. So it's discrete. We are observing discrete events like arrivals of clients, departures being served, how many clients in the queue. We treat this in a stochastic way, so we only have statistics of different properties, like the distribution of service times, distribution of arrival times, so nothing exact and given as sort of deterministic numbers. Normally, it requires numerical solution, but some properties, at least for simple models, can be derived analytically. So the whole branch of queuing theory is pretty much the art and science of making analytical conclusions of this type of models. So I hope I have given you some vocabulary for telling what this course is about. So we will be discussing of models that are used for prediction and design purposes. So we want models to be accurate enough so that you can draw conclusions on them. And we want our simulations to be accurate enough. We will not go to systematic optimization because it's pretty messy. We emphasize on discrete event models, so finite stochastic models, how the models are built, and especially how the simulation experiments are run, and how do you reason on the results you get from your numerical experiments. Because basically, what you get out from the simulation, it's a random number. that's a random number from certain distribution, and then you have to know what to do with it, because you get different random number on every run, and still you have to be able to make conclusions. Well, so what this requires, it requires some basic understanding of statistics and probabilities, and I would say some exposure to object-oriented programming. We will come back to that in video lectures, but the historical fact is that object-oriented programming was invented for the needs of simulation. That was almost 60 years ago, sorry. But that's more, there's more of that on lecture three. So the learning outcomes. So after this course, you should know the main concepts of discrete event simulation. You should have an understanding that there are different paradigms or different programming styles or modeling styles for discrete event simulation, and they lead to different types of simulation codes. So the paradigms have an implication to the software engineering part. You will be implementing simple simulation models. You will be running experiments with pseudo-random numbers, so you have to be able to operate on random number generators so that you are ruling the generators, not the generators ruling your experiments. You can analyze your simulation experiments for the correctness, for the reliability, and you should be able to design goal-driven simulation experiments. So if you're given a goal, you know how to make a series of simulation experiments that reaches towards this goal. So let's walk through the textbook process of simulation. So like almost any method, there's a nice linear flow chart from step one to step n that is given in the textbooks. Of course, the reality is not like that. So you have to iterate. You have to go back, learn from errors. But you have the baseline that you get sort of the overall of what is going on. So there are basically three major stages of simulation. One is before you start actually implementing it. So first of all, you have to understand what is the problem, which I told you already in the beginning for the first. So what is the essential question? Which features you have to model, and which perhaps you can leave out. Then you design the model. So you break up your system, the subsystems, components, their interactions. So you make a sort of flow chart or wireframe of the model, and this is something that you will be doing in the assignment one. And then what is the big task is to collect the data and estimate the parameters. That's hard work, and that is something you can do in the classroom, and we will not be doing that, so we will skip that. But very often that's pretty much the most costly step of the simulation. To actually get the data that is needed to understand the different features or different actions within the system. Because sometimes you can measure it from an existing system. Sometimes you are designing something that doesn't exist. So it's very hard to estimate what might happen in the new reality. So like if you make a new service, you can't measure sort of the consumer reactions or what is the client need and so on, client behavior. Very often a lot of surprises happen in that area. But that's something we have to skip on this course. So we will just assume something and you are given parameters and that's it. Then the second step is the software engineering part. So you have to design the software, implement it, and test it. So that looks like standard software engineering. In some sense, it is, but you will be seeing that what you have to simulate is a complicated web of concurrent processes. So there's lots of things going on in sort of independent paths, and it's sort of a tricky piece of software to manage. And of course, I try my best to give you the experience of getting to a situation where things are not that straightforward. So and that this part being in some sense tricky is of course the mother of different simulation paradigms. Now there are different ways of building this software. These require different things from the programming languages, environments, and that's why you have different approaches. They have their pluses and minuses, and these are pretty much the topics of lectures 2 and 3. Then, the actual sort of the scientific part is that you have to validate the model, that it gives you what you are looking for. It has the same qualitative properties of interest that you expect from the system. So you might have expectations. Your model should sort of follow the expectations, at least in the case where the expectations are justified. It's very much, for example, if you have a simplified test case that you can solve in some other way, of course, the complicated model should be able to reproduce the simple case to be valid at all. You may have a system, real system to compare, so you can have a reality as a baseline. And then if you don't have the reality check available and you have to analyze the complex behavior that you can't do your maths with, then you have to understand that you make some assumptions. You may have to invent parameters from thin air. Are these assumptions significant? How much does the system behavior qualitatively, quantitatively depend on the assumptions you have been making during modeling? So how sensitive, how fragile is your model with respect to all your assumptions, especially assumptions that are not based on solid evidence. So if you assume that the clients in the new system will behave in a certain way, and if they don't, does it ruin your conclusions? How sensitive the output will be on dependency on certain assumption structural parameter input. Of course, you may not be able to do it completely in the validation phase, but nevertheless, that's something to think about. Then you experiment with the model, so you make production runs, and you get out random numbers. Then you should be able to evaluate the accuracy or the confidence interval of the results. So if you know that with the simulation of 10,000 clients for 1 month, you get the confidence interval of plus minus 2%. Is it enough? Do you want sharper? And then you have to be able to design a full set of experiments that gives you the level of accuracy that you will be needing when using the results. Does it mean that you have to analyze 10 times more, 100 times more, million times more? Million times more might be too much, then you have to think of some other approach. So then you get your full set of experiments, get your results, and then you have to analyze the results. What conclusions can be made? Are the results reliable? Do they depend on some parameter that is sort of uncertain? So if this parameter changes by 10%, how does it change your results? Are the results safe for decision making? Eventually, if the model is solid, robust, can you do optimization on top of the model, find the optimal set of parameters and so on. How the courses run, there are three parallel threads that I intervened. One is the art of designing discrete event simulation models. So you will be first watching the lectures of different paradigms, programming techniques, and then designing your models. Then we will be discussing of the modeling, model-based decision making. So how to make decisions, how to make inference on top of simulation experiments. So if simulation gives us 10 different results, what can we infer from that? What kind of conclusions can be made? And then in your assignment section, you will be designing a simulation model, implementing simulation software, run experiments, and basically start making conclusions on these experiments. So the two first bullets are mainly lectures, third is assignments, and where you integrate all this. So what is the course structure? So today we will have this introduction, so this lecture. Then there are two pre-recorded lectures on simulation paradigms, event-based simulation and object-oriented simulation. So these are in lectures 2 and 3. Then there will be a lecture on random numbers, and then on Monte Carlo method or Monte Carlo simulation based on random numbers. And then we go to the discrete event system. So there's a lecture where we discuss different aspects of making an actual simulation experiment on a simulation model on discrete event system. And then particularities of simulation, which is control of variance. So how to play around with the things that you have available when simulating to reduce the variance of your simulation results, which means basically how to tighten your confidence intervals, how to make as accurate simulations as possible with the tools that are under your control. And the last lecture is about design of experiments and meta-modeling. So how to design a series of experiments that serves for some purpose and maybe gives an overview of or adds the understanding of the system that you are targeting. So how the course is run, as I told before recording, we don't have live lectures. The lectures have been pre-recorded, actually last year. I was too lazy to do it again. And I have scheduled 4 checkpoints in this classroom. I will try to make them hybrid also, but maybe not with recording, where we will be discussing the assignments. And the first one is within 2 weeks, then 2 more weeks, and then there's a tight loop, because again, we have periods of 7 weeks and it's hard to fit 4 2-week intervals in this. So we will be meeting on December 3rd, December 17th. And these are to discuss the group assignments, because you will be building on top of the previous assignments. So it's essential to get feedback to move forward. So that will be one challenge and bottleneck for me, especially if all the 30 plus students will be active, which means 10 to 12 groups of 3 people making exercises, which means 10 to 12 assignments for me to evaluate and give constructive feedback within the matter of a few days at maximum. You will have to share that workload. That's not the problem, but it's, I guess there's 30 plus people, if all are active, it's sort of on the limit I can handle. So the lectures are available, and some lectures are needed for the first assignment and a few more for the second and so on. And these will explain themselves as we go through the assignments and so on. To conclude this introduction, I have a couple of take-home messages that I will tell now, but you will start to value these during the course, and hopefully after the course you remember these and understand why these are important. So the first message is that don't simulate unless you have to. because simulation brings you random results. If you can do analytical, deterministic, it's always better. Because you reduce some error margins then. Of course, you can't do this by oversimplifying the system, but very often it's good to start with the simple system where you can do your maths, and sometimes it already helps you to solve the problem or to show that you understood the problem in the wrong way, or the guy who proposed the problem understood the problem in the wrong way, and you didn't have to bother about simulating. The next one is, do not simulate before you understand the question. Because once you start building a simulation model, especially implementing, you make some choices, and changing these choices can be very difficult once the work is in progress. Because you have to make some fundamental decisions very early on when you start building the model and software. And if these are wrong, then you have to restart. And the other wisdom is that when computing starts, thinking stops. Once you get on coding, you focus on coding, debugging, and you forget the problem. And that's sort of universal wisdom. So first understand the problem before touching your keyboard. And the third one is that all models are wrong. They're only models. They by default, they are wrong. But they can be useful in some situations. So you have to understand when the simulation is close enough, and when it is too far from the reality to be useful. So now I will try to